everybody. Cal Banyan here. Cal Banyan's Hypnosis, etc. Hey, you know what? I got something really special going on today. But before I tell you all about it, I want you to know that if you're watching this video anywhere except CalBanyan.com, go there now, because right below this video, we have additional links and text and maybe some graphics that'll make this this video a higher quality experience for you. All right. Now, you know, usually I have Meredith, or usually I have Elron, but today I've got someone extra special. And let me tell you about today's guest and see if you can figure out who it is. He is a very valuable mentor of mine. He has had a huge positive change effect on the profession as a whole around the world. He is a humanitarian. He's a recognized leader in the profession. He's the leader and founder, one of the founding members, original founding members of the National Guild of Hypnotists. He's a leading force in setting professional standards, ethics in the profession. He's responsible for three hypnosis publications, the Journal of Hypnotism, the Hypnogram, and the Hypnosis Today magazine. He ensures that one of the largest and friendliest hypnosis conventions happens each year. And he is known as the father of the profession as a unique and separate profession. Let me give to you today Dr. Dwight Damon. How you doing, Doc?
Terrific. It's nice to be here with you, Cal. I always enjoy your blogs, by the way.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
I don't always agree with them, Cal.
Well, you know, that's okay. A lot of people, you know, if I get 50-50, I'm feeling pretty good.
Well, that's the way I look at it, too. We have our ideas, and we want to put them out there for folks, and then they can make their own decisions.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I want to tell everybody the reason that I managed to get you here is because today, as we're recording this, we're getting ready to go to Anaheim to the National Guild of Hypnotists Solid Gold Weekend. And so Dr. Damon was willing to stop by our office. He's just had the grand tour of the Banyan Hypnosis Center, and now I'm going to have him talk on a very special topic. How is that for you there, Doc?
Very good. Yeah.
Okay.
You want me to go right into it? Is that it? That's the lead in? Why don't we talk a bit about solid gold? I do appreciate your inviting me here to your facility. It really is terrific. I'm glad to see it in person. And I'm very impressed. It's one of the finest facilities I've seen as far as professional hypnotism goes. I can probably name a dozen, and you're in the top dozen. So we are here for Solid Gold over in Anaheim. We've been doing it for 12 years. It's a weekend conference, and we do it usually in February or late February, going over into March. And for 12 years, we did it in over in Las Vegas. And we thought we would come over here and try it out in California, too. And basically, coming to Vegas was with keeping in mind, I think, that our members on the West Coast would be able to attend, that they would come over. So I thought we'd just bring it a little closer, and that's why we're here in California. And it's nice to be here, because this time of the year, we just came from a lot of snow and ice and on the other coast. So it is nice to be here. Now, you were mentioning the book, and are you interested to know what the title of the book is?
I would.
Of course. Well, the working title is The History of the Development of Hypnotism as a Separate and Distinct Profession in the United States Since World War II. And I figured that's an awful long title. It's okay for a working title. So I've shortened it to Hypnotic Recollections.
Good. And then the subtitle could be All That Stuff.
Well, we'll try to figure that one out. We'll have to have a big cover for it if we use the whole title. But that's what it does cover. I mean, it's actually covering about 66 years, over half a century, of the development of our profession. And you might want to ask me, why Dwight, you know, are you writing?
Well, let me tell everybody that this is the reason that I have the doc with us today. Is I was on the phone with him the other day, and he's telling me about this book, and he's just telling me all these stories, and it's things I've never heard before. And, you know, I've always wanted a book like this. There's all these old books on, you know, Mesmer and all those guys, but there wasn't really anything about the people I hear about, but that many I haven't met. And so I was very thrilled to, find that this book was coming out and encourage everyone, the National Guild, to do that. So proceed. Tell us all about it.
Well, we've been very fortunate, of course, that Dr. John Hughes, one of my associates, a longtime member of the National Guild of Hypnotists, has written some wonderful books about, well, I guess we would call it the ancient history of hypnotism, going all the way back to the sleep temples and Mesmer, Liebault, and so forth. And they're really great books, and they have served us well. And John did a wonderful research job and put out, we have a very fine product that people can read that part of the history. But I just thought it's important for us to know about what we have done to actually establish a profession. And a lot of people don't realize, if they're new to the field, that it's not all, it hasn't always been the way it is now. I mean, we fought some wars since 1945. And I think the reason I wrote it is because I lived it. And I think because I was young and enthusiastic and really into it, that I have good recall. We kind of were laughing at the convention last year, because I had three of my compatriots who were there, also from the same era, probably the only four of us that still remain around. And one of them said, "Heck, I can't even remember what I had for breakfast this morning." So I said, well, I do recall these things, and I do check with other people and say, do you remember this or do you remember that? And it's been an interesting journey, and we're still putting the book together. I'm not putting it in print until I have everything I want in it. For example, there was one man who was very, very important in our history of development here in the United States. And he wasn't a member of the National Guild of Hypnotists. He was actually a member of ACHE. And I'd only spoken to him once in all those years when there was a problem. I believe it was up in Salt Lake City, and I remember talking to him. It was a very cordial conversation, and we were trying to contact him to see what we could do to work together to solve this particular problem. And so I said, I have to have him in the book. So I started to ask people. I had a paid researcher. He couldn't find anything about him. I talked to people in Salt Lake City, said, oh yes, I was one of his students. I don't know what happened to him. I talked to other people, said, oh yes, he used to have an office in Salt Lake. And I'm not sure whether he died or he disappeared. And then finally, I got one very good clue. He's in a witness protection program. I said, okay, that's really good, but that makes it a little more difficult dealing with the government. But I was very fortunate that we have some good members down in Arizona. And I called Don Rice, and I said, Don, I need some help on this. And I think he's gone to that area. Those are the clues I've had. He's gone down somewhere in that area. He's on a witness protection program. And so Sandy Graves, who is an associate of Don Rice, did some work for us. And they said, we found him. He's in Arkansas or something like that. And here's his telephone number. And I called, and the phone was disconnected. So I called the little town that they said he was in and talked to the town officials. And they said, no, he died or he's not here. Everybody had a different answer. And I thought, well, he really isn't a witness protection program. But Sandy did keep going on it. And finally, I did get to talk to this man. And he had a very, very important message for me to put in the book. It's a report on how he went toe-to-toe with a psychologist who was trying to put us all out of business. Well, I think that's probably why I had talked to him on the phone, because there was a master plan at one time to put us all out of business, but they considered lay hypnotists. And so I also had been up against this man and his cohorts. So that's in the book. It's interesting. It's something we have to know. If we don't know our history, then we're apt to repeat the mistakes. We won't appreciate what has gone on before us. And, you know, a lot of times people say, well, everything's run by the good old guys. Well, that's not true. It's been run by the good old guys simply because as we have done the things we've done in this profession, we've aged. We can't help that. That's Mother Nature. But age is only a number. And so we are really looking to the younger people who are coming into the profession to keep things going, keep the momentum up. And I know we have a lot of people. What do you think about that? Don't you see a lot of people in your classes, Cal?
Well, I sure do. And you know, with youth comes that enthusiasm. And one of the things I kind of wanted to say is I can't think of a better person than you to write this book, because when I was at the National Guild of Hypnotists headquarters, you have all that documentation, journals going way back, and all that literature, and it, you have all those resources to back up. It's not just memory, but good, sound documentation of the history of hypnosis.
Well, we do. We have newspaper articles, we have ads, we have pictures. And sure, the pictures are old, but the history is old. And somebody said to me recently, well, I hope you're not going to put a bunch of old pictures in there. Well, of course I am, because they're from another era. And if we don't preserve those pictures, first operation done under hypnosis in Quincy, Mass, we have a picture of that. And if we don't preserve those things, then they're lost with time, and nobody will ever remember. So I think it's important, and we have a lot of archives, and we have a lot of artifacts that I have to be careful that I get so enthused about looking at the old things. And I have people who actually are sending me things. I have people on the internet who are very active in finding things for me. And so it's really a group effort. We have a lot of people that are interested in seeing this book completed.
Do you, in the new book, do you talk about, is it Dr. Rexford North?
Yeah, Dr. Rexford L. North was my mentor. Actually, you know, people say, well, can you learn to hypnotize from a book? And I always say, yes, you can, but it's better to have personal instruction, to have a mentor. And I bought my first book, it was either 1946 or 1947. I was a student at Cushing Academy, prep school up in Massachusetts. And back in those days, the ads were pretty lurid when it came to hypnotism. And not lurid. You saw the fellow with sparks coming out of his fingers, things like that. And so I was young, and I wasn't yet 16 because I didn't have a driver's license. So I was probably 15 or 16 years old. And I saw the ad, and I said, gee, I was already working when I wasn't in school as a professional magician because of my family's entertainment business. And so I thought, well, that would be nice to learn to do hypnotize people and use that in my act to, you know, hypnotize myself and others, was what they used to say. So I did get my first book, and I didn't really succeed in hypnotizing too many people because I was reading the script as I was going along, but I made the effort. But then when I went to Boston, to Emerson College, I was on my way to a frat rush party, and I saw a poster, a little poster, and an ad for a free lecture demonstration of genuine hypnotism. And I thought, well, genuine hypnotism, that must really be something. So I went, saw the demonstration. It was Dr. North. And I said, this is a course I have to take. And so I did study with him. I ended up going to work with him, living right there at the Hypnotism Center. I was still going to college, but I didn't have to pay for a rooming house or apartment or anything, and because I was staying at the Hypnotism Center, and part of my pay was my room in the apartment that was attached. So he was an unusual man. He was stone deaf, absolutely deaf, and he compensated in so many ways because of that deafness. And he taught me the real, true secret of persistence and follow through and detail. Everything was detail. I remember one time we were doing mailings, and I slipped in. Back in those days, our mailings were rather primitive. We didn't buy labels, we made labels. And I would type up the different labels, and I slipped in a couple of my friends' names. And he just scanned through real fast through the pile of brochures we were mailing out, spotted the two phonies, and pulled them out and said, you know, I'm not paying to send things to your friends. And at the time, I wondered, how the heck could he figure? Of course, now I realize everything else was alphabetical except the ones I put in there. But I was rather naive at that age. So yeah. I learned a lot with him. He was really quite a man. And when I went into the service, and when I went out to got out of the service. I used the GI Bill to go back to college, and I decided on a career as a chiropractor. And so I went out to Davenport, Iowa. And again, in those days, we didn't have email. We didn't have cell phones. And cell phone wouldn't have done any good with him anyway because he couldn't hear. And so he used to correspond by regular mail. And he was also did shows as well as running the office in the center. And he said he was going up to Maine to do a show. And that's the last I ever heard of him. He disappeared. Nobody in Boston knew what happened to him. Everybody was surprised that he just vanished off the face of the earth. And people have tried to find out what I've gone and made a lot of effort to try to find out what happened to him, but we don't know. So that's a bit of a mystery, but I know he'd be very proud of what we've accomplished, what all of our members and all of the hypnotists have accomplished in this 66, 67 years, probably 60 years that he's been gone. And he would be very, very enthusiastic about that.
Yeah, you know, so that's a mystery, right? And I'm thinking that there's probably some other interesting mysteries that maybe you could talk about in the world of hypnosis, or, you know, just interesting factoids for the audience that maybe they never heard anywhere else.
Well, I'll tell you a few things. I'll just give you clues because, you know, I'm not going to put the whole book on your blog.
Oh, come on.
I worked too hard to put it in print. Somebody said to me, why don't you record it and just read the whole book? And I thought, well, whenever I listen to a recorded book, I always fall asleep and lose my place, so I didn't think that was a good idea.
Yeah.
And, well, for example, we have a hypnotist that I speak about who put a contract out on his competitor and did jail time for it. And we have another one who actually we have a certified hypnotherapist from California who is also a TV and movie star. We have one who was from the East Coast, a ventriloquist on television, who also was a hypnotherapist. And these are people that didn't make a big thing out of it, but they were in the profession as well as the other professions that they had. And I think these will be interesting facts, or factoids, I guess, that people would like to hear about and read about. And much of this I can, you know, I'm substantiating with newspaper articles, magazines articles, 15-day hibernation, an actual hypnosis sleep done in a hospital in Chicago. That certainly is very, very interesting, and the results and so forth. So I think all of these things, they're interesting to me, and I think they're interesting to you, Cal, and I hope that they'll be interesting to everybody.
I do find it very interesting, and I'm kind of curious, what do you think are some of the real turning points, you know, critical points in this recent history of the profession?
Well, one of the turning points was when the American Psychology Association, Division 30, was meeting in New Orleans. I don't remember the exact year, but that's when they introduced the master plan on how to get rid of the lay hypnotist. And they printed it all up, and I love the fact that on the material it says, go ahead and use this, there's no copyright, everybody can use it. So I figured since they said we could use it, I print the whole thing in the book, and it tells the psychologists and psychotherapists how they should go about getting rid of us and how to get adverse publicity about us and be careful you don't say this or that. And that was really interesting, but that was a turning point because I called some of the other groups, the other associations, and I remember I called the president at that time of, I think his name was Levine from New Jersey, but I called him and I said, we'd really like to have the AAEH, the Association for the Advancement of Ethical Hypnotism, will work along with us on this. We're trying to get all of the different organizations across the country to help us combat this master plan. And he said, well, I'll tell you, Dr. Damon, he said, I've got committees. And he said, by the time I round up all these people who are on the committees and get permission, you will already have solved the problem. And I guess he was right, because we can't wait. I've had some wonderful volunteers in the years, people who work, well, for example, Scott Giles. Reverend Scott Giles is a licensed counselor, minister in Illinois. He doesn't need to worry about licensing or protecting a professional hypnotist because he's covered already under his other license. But he has been the kingpin of our ethics committee and our legislative liaison officer. And he's done all this as a volunteer. Spends a lot of time and a lot of money doing these things because he's interested in benefiting the profession. And there are so many more people that work along with us. And I won't mention the people who are on the ethics committee. We usually don't do that. Scott doesn't mind, but because we don't want people calling them and saying, well, I disagree with your opinion and so forth. We're not taking votes on that. They look at all the facts when there's an ethics complaint, and they discuss this among the committee members. We have ministers. We have two ministers, a lawyer, a nurse. I guess that's it.
And a Cal Banyan.
I'm sorry. Yes, and
whatever
Cal,
I am.
Cal, well,
a diplomate.
Because you're sitting right here with me. I didn't think of you. I'm looking at you, yes. But now you've given it away, you see.
I'm not afraid.
They'll call. All right.
Bring it on.
I'm just you know, an ex officio officer, so there's no way of saying that I'm judging or commenting on the outcome of an ethics complaint. And I think it's very important for us to be very ethical. And in this day and age, I'm not going to get on a rant, but I may be getting on a rant. There are people who are doing things in the field of hypnotism. They're absolutely ridiculous. They're taking us back a step or two or 24 or 100. And they're doing things that don't point to us as being professional. I mean, it's not a game anymore. It's not just an amusement. We have a profession. And in the Guild, we like to say we're consulting hypnotists, that we work with ordinary, everyday people for ordinary, everyday problems of life. And there's so many ways you can expand from that when you're talking to a person. And, you know, I hope you don't mind if I digress just a bit. But this year I would really like every hypnotist out there who is practicing or full-time, part-time, anytime, to realize that the greatest PR we have, public relations, is located between the nose and the chin. It's your mouth. The minute you mention hypnotism or hypnosis, or I'm a consulting hypnotist, or here on the West Coast, I'm a certified hypnotherapist, they want to know more. People are just, they tell me about it. I mean, so you do just smoking and wait, and then you have a chance to tell them all of the wonderful things we do. And it is a wonderful tool because if you are a professional hypnotist, you have a wonderful tool to use for yourself with self-hypnosis, for your family all through their lives, and for your clients. So you should be very, very willing to talk about it and to network. I'll mention Patricia McIsaac, who is here for the Solid Gold. Patricia built a practice in Massachusetts. Single mom, never been in business before, opened up an office, and she built her practice by networking. She tells everybody about the fact that she's a hypnotist, and she talks to them about it. And no matter where she goes, so she networks if she's here in California, although her office is in Massachusetts. She networks when she's in other countries. And if we all did that, boy, oh boy, I tell you, it would certainly advance us a lot of giant steps. We've invested money before in buying services which plant stories in newspapers across the country. We spent quite a few dollars on that. And I don't think it really did a lot of good. People read an article and they say, well, that's interesting, and they go on to some other interesting article. But when they're talking to somebody, and that person is a hypnotist, and can say, actually, we work with people from the womb to the tomb. Oh, from the womb to, what do you mean? Well, we have people who can't conceive and they come to a hypnotist, and there are people who specialize in hypnofertility. There's hypnobirthing, easier childbirth. We have people who specialize in pediatric hypnosis, working with children, and all the way up to geriatric hypnosis when they're senior citizens, and perhaps hypnosis for grief when their partner dies. So There's my rant. I guess I got going. I've watched your program too much.
You know how we rant on this program, so you're just perfect.
I know, but it's a good way to be able to communicate with people.
Yeah.
It really is. You do a wonderful job.
Well, thank you very much. You know, as you're talking about ethics, is there anything in the book about why we needed to develop the code of ethics and that kind of thing?
Oh, absolutely. I touch on everything. I touch on the ethics. I touch on the union. I touch on, and you know, this is not a book just about the National Guild of Hypnotists. I am, interested in the West Coast as well. The East Coast, the West Coast, but it is about the United States and Canada. I wasn't active in the overseas development of different countries, but I was very active here in the United States. And although there are people, for example, here on the West Coast, there was one very prominent hypnotist who had an organization and very outspoken and attacked me constantly. But still he would call me up like we were old friends and have a chat and tell me what I should be doing with our organization, what I should be doing with my life. And I tell a few stories about that too. But I don't ignore this man because he made some great contributions to the profession. And so I certainly would not malign him. He had some flaws in his character, but we all probably do. And so I've tried to touch on as many organizations as I could. There will be some I miss because there are some organizations that start up and only have, you know, a handful of members and they never get much publicity and they stay to themselves. They're more parochial or localized. And so I may not mention them and I can't, you know, I can't be responsible for that. I do the best I can and I've done a lot of research. And we talk about the unions and people say, union hypnotist? Why would hypnotists be unionized? Well, people don't realize, our own people in the profession don't realize that we need the unions. You may not be a union person out there. You may say, well, I don't really need unions. I don't need, contract negotiations or anything like that. Salary bargaining, I don't need that. Collective bargaining, no, I'm independent. That may be true, but there's no getting around it. The unions still have a lot of clout, a lot of power in the legislative process here in the United States. And it has been so good when we've been able to call on our union. The National Federation of Hypnotists has been able to call on OPEIU, that's the union we're attached to, the Office of Professional Employees International Union, and they're attached to the AFL-CIO, CLC, the whole thing, and say to them, we need a lobbyist, for example, up in Ottawa, Canada, because there's a bill that's in the legislature now that has been fostered by the psychotherapist and would be very bad for the hypnotist. And they say, well, we don't have a lobbyist up there right now, but how much do you think it will cost? And they gave us $20,000. I didn't say they gave us, they invested $20,000 in hiring a professional lobbyist, and he was able to work with us and help to solve the problem. And they've always come to us when we needed them. We had a situation in Florida just recently where a new legislator was inadvertently, they were trying to wipe out bills and parts of bills that were useless. You know, they sunset these different things. And a lot of work has been done in Florida, and I cover that way, way back to when we had Joe B. McCauley, who fought the so-called gypsy law. And I tell that story and became the first business licensed hypnotist in the state of Florida. But just recently, as this new legislator was going through this, he submitted a bill to take some things out of the current legislation. One of the things was the exemption that we have, that we've worked so hard to maintain, allowing us to practice in the state of Florida. And so right away, as soon as we heard, and it's a funny thing. Again, I digress a bit. A person from up, I believe, in Wisconsin, one of our members in Wisconsin, contacted us about what was going on in Florida. Nobody in Florida knew, and which really is I tell everybody, you've got to know what's going on in your state legislators' offices, because you're a constituent. You vote for them. They're glad to keep you informed about anything that has to do with hypnotism, hypnosis, or hypnotherapy. Just ask and support them and let them know that you vote for them. You're a constituent. So anyway, this fellow from up in the cold told us about it. We contacted the union immediately. They got Attorney Levy, Bob Levy, who is their lobbyist down there, who turned out to personally know this legislator, had worked with him in Tallahassee at the state capitol, and immediately talked to him. Now, I know there's a lot of people out there who are taking credit. Well, my letter, my email, my phone call turned the tide. I'm glad you all sent letters. You all made phone calls. You all did these things, emails and so forth. But I also know that the union lobbyist personally is acquainted with a representative, and he did his job too, and didn't cost us anything. And I'm glad. And so many people have seen how fast they can help us, and we've had a sudden influx of members in the union. We're always glad to have people join the National Federation of Hypnotists 104, Local 104.
Now, you know, so, Doc, as I'm listening to this, it reminds me of, you know, I only belong to one hypnosis organization. That's the National Guild. I don't feel any reason to do another. But you can belong, people out there can belong to other organizations and the National Guild of Hypnotists at the same time. Isn't that right?
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that, and many of the other organizations, I'm looking at the hypnogram right now on page 4, they talk about all the different organizations that have merged with the National Guild over the years. And IHA, HECI, NACH, HIN, ASRCH, NSH, IASH, HS, AAEH. And so, you know, the National Guild is the one that's been there all along and continues to be the ones that are connected and able to take action quickly when our profession is in peril. Is that right?
That's right. And the thing is that when Dr. North disappeared, and I told you about his strange disappearance, we sort of went downhill because there was no more leadership. And that's what happens with these other organizations. They don't have the leadership, and you can't depend on everybody just volunteers to run an organization. You have to have a strong leadership presence. And we decided when we wanted to revitalize the National Guild of Hypnotists that we were going to run it just like AARP or the Red Cross, or well, it was going to be run in a business-like manner. And that's what we did. And it was a struggle to get off the ground once again and bring it back up to its prominence. I remember Elsa Meldridge, who runs our Florida convention office, saying to me one day, you know, if we keep going this way, someday we're going to have 1,000 members. You know, we're over 10,000 now. I don't know how many. We're in 71 or 72 countries. And but to us back then, wow, we might be 1,000 members someday. But we were persistent and we worked hard, and we run it on a business-like basis. And we don't have to ask 22 people or two committees. If we can do something, we can take action steps, and we do. And we try to give our members, and I don't want this to just be a commercial for the National Guild, but why not, I guess. I have the opportunity. We try to give you more than your money's worth that you pay in dues. And we do. We have two wonderful publications, the Journal of Hypnotism and the Hypnogram. I say they're wonderful, because if I said otherwise, I'm the editor of both, and that wouldn't be nice for me to say that. We also do Hypnosis Today, which is a great PR tool, and that people haven't quite learned to use. It's a magazine that is devoted to stories about hypnotism and actually the wonders of hypnotism. And when I travel, I always carry a lot of them in my briefcase, as many as I can. They get a little heavy after a while. And just on the way out here to California, we had a very nice flight attendant. I have a tendency to go back to the old verbiage of stewardess, you know, gender-specific, actor, actress. And, you know, I get chastised for that many, many times. and I don't mean anything by it, but so we had a flight attendant who was very, very solicitous, not only to us, but to other people, and we were flying on points naturally. I love flying on points and flying first class. I believe every hypnotist should be a first class citizen, so I practice what I preach. And so I naturally, I always go up to the galley and introduce myself and say, I've got a couple of magazines that we publish. It has some great stories in here. And I notice you have three of you folks working, and I know you have downtime in between flights. You have time, sometime on flights to read. There's some good stories, and I point out the different stories. Like, here's one about Larry Garrett. He was told by the FBI he could go over and hypnotize Uday Hussein. He was in Baghdad when 9/11 occurred. Here's one about Patricia McIsaac when she was doing hypnosis for AIDS, HIV and AIDS patients in Botswana in Africa. And I point out the different articles very briefly and give them the magazine. I said, here's for all of you. And right away, the head flight attendant said, wow, this is great. You know, do you do smoking and weight? And I said, oh, we do smoking and weight. We're consulting hypnotists. And she said, consulting hypnotists? What is that? And so it gave me an opportunity to do the PR. Well, we work with ordinary everyday people for ordinary everyday problems of life. And we consult with physicians, we consult with psychiatrists, we consult with anybody who wants to work with us, and we consult with the general public. And so, you know, and then you just can expand from there if you see the person wants to know more. And so many opportunities to do this when you're in a line, waiting in a line, and people say, oh, or you're on a plane, people say, what do you do for a living? What an entree. I was in an elevator once at a hospital. You know how large the elevators are, so they can get a gurney in there. And the token priest, this is a Catholic hospital that had been taken over by management, so they still had one priest and one nun. And he was standing in one corner of the elevator, I was standing in the other, and I had my pin on my lapel. And I noticed he was turning his head like this, and he was reading the pin. National Guild of Hypnotists. Oh, are you a hypnotist? And I said, yes, I am. He said, are you Dr. Damon from Merrimack? I was a nearby town. I said, yes, I am. And so we had a wonderful conversation. And this priest in a medical hospital became a great referral source. And naturally, I sent him free information as soon as I got back to the office. And we do. There's a little joke about that, and it's a true story. You want me to tell that?
Yes, please.
Oh, of course. Well, I don't know. I don't want to bore you with all these things, but I think they're
that's what we've got you on here for, is to bore
okay.
us with all these good stories.
Well, I just feel like I'm being pretty gabby, but that's one of my traits. So, you know, they always say that, you know, the guy that has the mic has the control, and I've always believed that to be very true. So, the idea was that I was in the office, and those were back in the days when I used to answer the phone on a weekend. I used to check the emails on the weekend. I used to check the, you know, fax machine, everything on the weekend. And I shouldn't have even been doing that, but I was. So it was just after closing on Friday, and Melody had not left the office yet. The phone rang, and I said, I'll get it. So I answered, and it was a woman from New York City, and she wanted to order something. And I said, well, okay. And I wrote it down. I said, I'll take care of this. I'll have the girls send it out Monday morning. Dr. Damon. What do you mean, the girls? And she said, you know, I'm going to send you a booklet, When Girls Become Women. And I said, well, the thing is that the girls I'm referring to are my daughters. And they, from the time they were conceived and born, they've been called my girls, and I don't like to be called anything else. And so anyway, she was apologetic about it. Then right after that, and Melody was standing there thinking that I had really insulted somebody. Right after that, the phone rang again. And a woman called and she said, I'd like more information about hypnotism. And we chatted for a few minutes, found out what she wanted, and I said, okay. On Monday, I'll have them send you, and I didn't say girls this time, I will have them send you a nympho kit. And she said, I'm not a nympho. And I said, sorry, you misunderstood me. I said, info, I-N-F-O. And so we get our laughs dealing with people. It's the public. And you know you have this happen in the office. You have strange things that happen, funny things that happen. and you reflect on it, and it's all part of the big scheme. It's all part of being a hypnotist and being in this wonderful profession.
You know, if you're not having fun, then you're just not in the right profession.
Well, when I had my chiropractic clinic, that's trouble. I joked around probably too much with patients, but they liked it. They were my friends, and they became my friends, and I think that's very, very important. When my wife died, I think it was a year or two afterwards, and I've lost several sweethearts to cancer, but the latest one, I was at a stoplight and had stopped, and it was in the summertime. Car pulled up next to me, and he motioned me to put the window down. I put the window down, and he said, "Hi, Doc." He says, "You remember me?" And he told me his name. I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, I wanted to congratulate you." He said, "I saw a picture of your wedding picture, and I thought, it's wonderful. You got married again." Well, she had just died. But I thought, here's a guy who I haven't seen for years. I don't really even remember, but I remember he was a chiropractic patient of mine, but I'm not sure of his name. And he remembers me enough that he wants to congratulate me on my marriage. And I certainly didn't have the heart to say, well, she died. But,
Well, you know, so much of being a hypnotist is just being good with people. Isn't that right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I use certain examples. Jacob Bimblich, Larry Garrett, Cal Banyan, Patricia McIsaac. Sometimes you have generations of people that have been coming to you. The original client comes in for something, and then somebody else in the family, and then the next generation, and then a cousin. And it's like Larry said to me once, he said, "I have people that have been coming to me for years, come in once a month." And if people say anything, they say, well, you may go to a massage therapist once a month. Why not go to a hypnotherapist?
Right.
And I think that's good if you develop that you're helping them and they become your friend as well as your client.
Now, Doc, we're kind of running out of time. And I'm wondering if you could maybe say some last little comments about the book and maybe tell everybody about the convention that's coming up.
Okay, the convention is August 12th through the 14th, and this is the world's largest and friendliest hypnotism convention. We hold it in Marlborough, Mass., and you can check on our website. We have information, ngh.net.
I'll have a link below.
We would love to have you come to the convention. Everybody comes, gets their battery recharged. We have 14 seminars or workshops going every hour right across the board. We have at a good-sized hotel, and so we have things going on constantly, and it's a wonderful, wonderful chance to get together with your colleagues and to network and to make new friends. It's the chance of meeting the name people that are in the profession, Cal Banyan, Jerry Kine, Don Martin, all of the people that you whose columns you read, and you get to meet them in person. And we call it the world's largest and friendliest, and it is. We're all available for you. People often grab my arm and say, "Can you talk for a minute?" I can always talk for a minute. That's my job, talking, as you can tell from this interview. But I'm always glad to talk with people, and that's what we're there for. So I hope that you can come up there. That's August 12th through the 14th. I always have to check the date because I have so many dates going around my mind having worked on the book. And I hope when the book comes out, Hypnotic Recollections, that you'll want to read it. And
can you give us an estimated date of arrival?
My goal, and this is about the third deadline, but my goal is right now is to have it out by convention time. And so I'm really driving hard on doing that. And I don't know, we're up over 100 pages now, and we haven't put all of the artifacts and the different photos and so forth in, and I still have a couple of more chapters to do on specifics, for example, on women in hypnotism. I think we have to explain why there weren't women back in the early part of the era, and when they came in, and the women who made great contributions to the profession, and so there's, and stage hypnosis. Actually, I am doing a chapter on stage hypnosis. Back when I started, we were mostly all stage hypnotists. We had 95% of us probably that were stage hypnotists, and 5% that actually did clinical or office work.
Well, you know, L. Ron would like to wipe out all stage hypnotism everywhere.
Yeah, and I did watch that, and but I'm going to tell you something. You know, I have mixed feelings about it. Would it make things any better? No, I don't think so. People enjoy it as an entertainment if it's done nice in a nice manner, ethically, and you work with clients. Because I've had many clients come to me after seeing a show. But on the other hand, he does have. I love it when you have him on with you, because he has some very strong opinions, and I respect his opinions. So and I respect yours, and I respect the fact that you are open to everything, and that you support the union, you support the guild, and you support the profession really hard. You and Maureen do a wonderful job out here in California, and you're going to be speaking this weekend at Solid Gold, and of course you do your workshops and so forth in August at our convention. So
I'm looking forward to doing the Week of Power there in August. So, well, Doc, we're out of time. That's it.
It's been fun.
I want to thank you so much for stopping by the Banyan Hypnosis Center and doing this. It's a real treat, and we're going to have this up on calbanyan.com, and it's also distributed throughout the internet in different places and stuff. But I just want to say that I really appreciate the guidance that you've given me over the years as I've been growing and maturing in the profession. It has really been useful to be able to call you up and get your input on things. It's really been a big part of my personal and professional development. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. This is Cal Banyan, Cal Banyan's Hypnosis, etc. We'll be back. And, I don't know exactly when I'm going to have it up, but we're going to have another special co-host coming up that we've never had before. And you're going to be excited to see who it is. All right. That's it. Cal Banyan signing off. This recording is the property of Cal Banyan and Cal Banyan's Banyan Publishing Incorporated. All rights reserved, for private use only, may not be duplicated without written permission.